Caroline, Willie, D. Mays, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We're streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. And we're broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. So we are almost locked in, not quite yet, into the Predators Stanley Cup playoffs opponent in the first round, at least. It's looking like 91% likely that it is the Vancouver Canucks. So joining us now to preview the Predators in the Stanley Cup playoffs is our friend Adam Vingan, who will join us every single Wednesday throughout the Stanley Cup playoffs. Adam, happy to have you on board weekly. Just want to open it up to how you view the Canucks as a potential opponent for the Nashville Predators.
Yeah, we talked about it a little bit last week, and the Canucks clinched their first division title last night, I believe since 2013, by defeating the Calgary Flames. So some history made there, not really history because they've won division titles before, but it's been a long time since the Canucks won a division title. They've also won 50 games for the first time since 2012. So it's been a while since the Canucks have had this type of success. But sort of what we talked about last week, you know, the Canucks got off to such a great start. But over the past 2+ months, they've been playing slightly above 500 hockey. You know, since they came back from their all-star break / bye week on February 6th, the Canucks have a 17-11-4 record, which is a .594 points percentage, which is 14th. In the NHL since February 6th. By comparison, the Predators over that same span, 21-7-3, a .726 points percentage, which is third in the NHL, only behind the New York Rangers, who have won the President's Trophy, and the Carolina Hurricanes. So the interesting thing about the Canucks is they played the past month without their starting goaltender, Thatcher Demko, who suffered a knee injury in early March. He came back last night, made 39 saves on 40 shots, in his first game action in about 6 weeks. But when you look at their goals against during the time he was out of the lineup compared to their goals against before he got hurt, they were roughly the same. They actually played really well defensively in his absence. Their offense has cratered compared to the beginning of the season. They're averaging 2.84 goals per game over their past 32 games, which is 24th in the league. So their defense has helped them win a lot more games than their offense over the past few months. So I'm not really sure what kind of Canucks team you're getting. I mean, are you getting a team that's rounding into form? You know, they're playing well defensively. Maybe that offense comes back. Or are you catching a team that got off to such a hot start and has been treading water for most of the past few months? So it makes the Canucks a really fascinating potential first-round opponent.
And not only do you know what Canucks team you're getting, you also don't know when you're going to get them. We heard on the 32 Thoughts podcast with Elliot Friedman and Jeff Merrick, Elliot said that he anticipates the Canucks' first playoff game to be played on Tuesday, which would be 8 days between the Predators' final game and their first playoff game. I don't know if a team has ever had 8 full days of rest between the end of the regular season and the beginning of the playoffs, Adam. But if that is, in fact, what the case is, how do you approach that week plus of balancing rest and balancing trying to mimic as much in-game play as you possibly can?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I can lean on some experience. You know, back in 2017, it wasn't the end of the regular season to the first round of the playoffs, but after the Predators swept the Blackhawks in the first round of the playoffs, and Willie can correct me if I'm wrong here, they had at least a week between the end of the Blackhawks series and the beginning of the Blues series. They definitely had a lot of time, and I know they took several days off after the series, and they had some really tough practices. And I mean, that's really all you can do. I mean, rest is a weapon, I think, at this time of the season. Now, as far as we know, the Predators aren't nursing any significant injuries, but it doesn't hurt to have a little extra time, in my opinion, to rest up, heal up before the grind of the postseason when there are very few days off. And as you said, Caroline, it's been reported in multiple places that we're not really sure what the schedule is going to look like for the Canucks and Predators, if that is indeed the matchup, just because Rogers Arena apparently has a ton of concerts going on in the next few weeks. But, you know, it reminded me of, and I don't think this is going to happen, but I think you'll guys get a kick out of this. Back in 2009, I think it was, the Capitals and the Penguins were playing in the playoffs, and Mellon Arena, which is the Penguins' old arena, was having so many events, including a Yanni concert. Remember Yanni, everybody? They were having a Yanni concert that they had to play games 4 and 5 and back-to-back. I think it was game 4 in Pittsburgh, game 5 in Washington, because of a Yanni concert that could not be moved at Mellon Arena. So at least this time, I guess it's like Justin Timberlake and Pearl Jam in Rogers Arena, yes. I think it is. So at least
better than Yanni, at least.
Yeah, like with Yanni, I'm like, when was Yanni popular? I don't even know. It wasn't in 2009.
We actually, Darren McFarland and I interviewed Yanni at the Super Bowl Radio Row 1 year, which was quite surreal. Quite surreal.
In what year? And
that
year
would have been that? Like 2003.
Okay.
So he might have been past his prime by 2009. So,
right, so at least Justin Timberlake, you know, he's a pop star.
An A-list.
Star.
Yeah, he's A-list.
He's A-list. He's supporting a new album. I guess you don't have to move Justin Timberlake, but the NHL wouldn't move for Yanni. So if they won't move for Yanni 15 years ago, who knows what they'll do this time around. But just because of the significant length of, you know, the geographical difference between Vancouver and Nashville, you know, it's not like if they were playing Dallas in the first round, you know, which is still a possibility, even though it's a small possibility. Like, that's not a short, they're in the same time zone. It's a short flight. If they had to do it, I mean, you can make an argument for it, but flying to Vancouver from Nashville direct on is 4 to 5 hours at least, and crossing multiple time zones. So it just doesn't make sense. I don't think there's any scenario in which those teams will play back to back where they have to travel. I wonder if they would play back to back if necessary in games 3 and 4, which isn't great, but both teams would have to do it. So there would be no advantage necessarily in both teams having to play back-to-back. It's not like during the regular season where one team might be playing on the second half of a back-to-back and the other team's been at home resting. Both teams will have to do it, so there's not much of a competitive advantage.
It does appear to be complicated because the Pearl Jam is a 2-concert deal, which takes the arena out of the mix for 3 days, May 4th through the 6th. And so Ryan O'Reilly might be like, hey, is there a way I could get to one of these? Because he is a huge Pearl Jam fan. But that would be very tricky to not have your building available for 3 straight days at the end of a series where, you know, by that time, round 2 is getting going and, like, you're holding up the whole league if you can't stay on pace. So this could be a little complicated. But, Adam, I want to ask you, too, another thing I noticed about Vancouver. I was watching last night. You mentioned Demko. I think that's a huge thing, getting him back. What version? Because he's had a great year. He's probably going to be a Vezina finalist, probably not win it, but he's probably in the top 3. If he brings that into the playoffs, that makes them so much better. But I look at their lineup. Barry Trotz was asked about this yesterday with Jared. It's no comparison in terms of overall playoff experience, the Predators roster versus the Canucks roster. So what factor do you think that is? Barry Trotz obviously thinks that's significant.
Yeah, it's an interesting question because, you know, sometimes I can see it as an advantage. Sometimes I think it's something that we talk about as a potential advantage, but which may not ultimately have an advantage. But we talked about this last week, you know, the Canucks core players, specifically Elias Pettersson, Quinn Hughes, and Brock Besser, have only appeared in one postseason, and that was in 2020. That was the bubble. They played 17 games, the Canucks did, in that postseason. Demko was the backup goaltender for the Canucks at that time behind Jacob Markstrom. I think he played in 4 games and made 3 starts. So he has even less NHL playoff experience. Their leading scorer, JT Miller, has a lot of playoff experience. He's played in the playoffs with the Rangers. He played with the Lightning. He didn't win any of the, he wasn't on any of the cup winning teams with the Lightning, but he did have playoff experience with the Lightning. And then of course with the bubble and with the Canucks in the bubble. So he has playoff experience, but it's no contest based on playoff experience, Vancouver versus Nashville. As I stated last week, Ryan McDonagh by himself has 185 games of playoff experience. And the only player, active player, with more is Corey Perry, who has, I believe, 196. So by himself, McDonough has more experience than the majority of players on the Canucks, which is why I also wonder if this is a situation where the Canucks might be ripe for an upset, because they don't have that experience. They don't know what it takes to win, quote unquote. And sometimes teams need that experience to ultimately get to where they're going. I've mentioned the Predators as an example of that. I specifically remember 2016, 7 games with the Ducks, 7 games with the Sharks. I remember how important those 2 playoff series were for a lot of the core players on that team: Roman Josi, Philip Forsberg, Matthias Ekholm, Ryan Ellis, etc. So I wonder if this is that year for the Canucks. But, you know, I trust Barry Trotz. He knows more about the game than I ever will. He's forgotten more about the game than I'll ever know. So if he thinks it's an advantage, it could be an advantage.
The other thing I think is interesting is the backdrop of Vancouver is, if you wind the clock back about a year and a half, they were a total mess. You had Brock Besser, who's had a really good year. He was asking publicly, it was a huge story, I want to be traded. I want out of here. Like, they looked like a time where they were going to break up the team. They were looking to just change everything. And then Rick Tocchet has come in and done a tremendous job of re-galvanizing everything. So it's quite remarkable, the turnaround. I was watching their broadcast last night, and they had a segment in the intermission just talking about how refreshing it's been. How, because there's, and Adam, you've experienced this, right? Vancouver, if you think things get negative here, Vancouver, there's a lot of negativity around that team. Like, oh, here we go again. They stink. They don't know what they're doing. They had that vibe, but Rick Tocchet has sort of erased that.
Yes. I mean, remember Bruce Boudreau was coaching the Canucks at one point last year.
Yes.
And it was dead man walking, and he knew it, and it was very uncomfortable. Like he knew that he was eventually going to get fired. Like, he had an idea of when he was going to get fired specifically. Like a stretch of home games before they went on a road trip, or a road trip. Actually, it was the other way around, I think. They were on a road trip before they came home for a long homestand, so he knew he was going to get fired on that day, and he did. And Rick Tocchet, to his credit, you know, you saw the makings of some headway that he was that they were making under Tocchet at the end of last season, and of course this year got off to a great start. You know, he's probably a favorite for the Jack Adams, which, Willie, you vote for, so you'll have a say in who wins the Jack Adams.
He's in there. I think he's a heavy favorite. I think I'd be surprised if he didn't win it.
Right. Like, I mean, we talked about this. I think Andrew Brunette absolutely deserves to be a finalist. But I think that Tocchet, just because the Canucks won their division and were a top team for much of the season, might have an edge over Brunette. Because really the Canucks, you know, defied expectations too. Nobody expected them to be this good. But, you know, Tocchet's done a really good job. You know, market, like the Canadian, we know the Canadian markets are much tougher on their teams than their American counterparts for the most part. The Vancouver, because they haven't had much success over the past decade, it gets really negative there. Listening to the 32 Thoughts podcast, and anytime Elliot Freeman talks about the Canucks, there's always that undercurrent of they hate me up there because of all the things I say and all that. So there's going to be a lot of pressure on Vancouver, no doubt.
Now, Adam, how do you classify this season for the Nashville Predators? Or is it still an incomplete? You want to see how they do in this year's playoff?
I mean, I think the fact that they comfortably made the playoff makes this season, in my opinion, a resounding success, which is not something that you would say about most Predators teams recently, because they had higher expectations than just making the playoffs. But when you consider how many people picked against them in preseason picks to make the playoffs, and the fact that they made it in, of course, they had their 18-game point streak, all that. I absolutely think the season is already a success. And, you know, I sat down with Barry Trotz 2 weeks ago, I think it was. It was before the Boston game, for a story I'm writing for Sportsnet.ca, which will be published later this week or over the weekend. And he said to me, as he said on this station as well, that even he had his doubts about what this team could be. It could be anywhere from bad to sneaky good. And the fact that they made the playoffs and you know, without, you know, you see all the, you look at what happened last night in the NHL, which was captivating theater with Detroit and Washington and Philadelphia. It was awesome to watch. But the Predators didn't have to worry about that. They were in. Like, it wasn't like they had to, you know, make it on the last day of the season. So, to me, anything from this point on should be considered gravy for the Predators. I think the fact that they made the playoffs and they did it somewhat convincingly in the second half of the season when nobody expected them to make the playoffs at all makes this season a success already. Now, starting next season, that might not be the case. Mm-hmm. But this season, I think it is.
Now, we've talked about this time period that the Predators are going to have off. And, you know, frankly, we've said it's going to end up being too much time. But then after the first game, it really doesn't matter after that when it's just the initial first game. But there's games still to be played before the season ends. Is this good for the NHL that it's ending this way, that we don't know quite what's what, things are not settled? Because as long as things are not settled, eyes are going to continue to be on the NHL and ultimately what their playoff bracket will be.
Right. Think about last night, as I mentioned. You had a situation where the Capitals, where you had four teams, right? Washington, Willie can correct me. Washington, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, and Detroit were all still alive.
Still mathematically alive, yes.
They were still mathematically alive. And you had the Capitals and Flyers playing each other. You had Detroit tie the game with 3 seconds left to force overtime, which eliminated the Flyers, who then pulled their goalie because they needed a win in regulation. They obviously didn't know the results of the Red Wings game. The Capitals score. They make the playoffs also out of nowhere because they were not expected to do much of anything this season either. You know, the fact that these games still mean something, like the Blues play the Stars tonight. The Stars still haven't clinched the Western Conference. Like that makes that game mean something. If tomorrow the Golden Knights and Kings play, not each other. Vegas plays Anaheim, Los Angeles plays Chicago. Third place in the Pacific Division is still unsettled. Like the Knights have a 1-point lead, but the Kings have the tiebreaker if they tie in points. So one of those teams is going to be in the third place spot and play the Oilers. The other team's going to be in the wild card 2 spot and probably will play the Stars, but there's still meaningful hockey to be played on the last day of the season. So the fact that there are still playoff seedings to be figured out, I'm okay with it. Now, if it was 3 days of meaningless games where all the teams had all their spots and we're just running out the string, that would suck. But the fact that they have these games that mean something up until the last day of the season, I'm okay with it. And I think it makes, you know, a game against, like, under no circumstances would I watch a Golden Knights versus Ducks game on a regular basis. But if I'm still awake at 9 o'clock tomorrow, I may put it on. And that's what the NHL is open for.
Okay, quick sidebar. Adam, you used to cover the Capitals before you came to Nashville. Is this the worst Capitals team ever to make the playoffs? Like -37 goal difference? Like how are they there?
It has to be. It has to be. I remember in 2008 it was they needed to win on the last day of the regular season to make the playoffs, and they won the division by winning that game against, I believe it was Florida, on the last day of the regular season to make the playoffs for the first time in the Alex Ovechkin era. But yeah, the goal differential is just ghastly. Part of it is because the teams around them also stink. I mean, the Flyers at one point recently lost 8 games in a row. You know, the Red Wings were up and down. The Penguins had a point streak, but even then they couldn't make it. So some of it has to do with the fact that the teams around them also stink. But, you know, I think a lot of this has to go to goaltending. I mean, Charlie Lindgren came out of nowhere, you know, for the Capitals this year, played exceptionally well, you know, stole the starting job from Darcy Kemper, you know, played back-to-back games. He shut out the Bruins on Monday and then held the Flyers to 1 goal
That's
left.
Pretty clutch.
Yeah, that absolutely. So, you know, I think goaltending has played a part of it. It also helps that Alex Ovechkin, you know, found the fountain of youth in the second half of the season. You know, more than halfway through the season, he had 8 goals. And you know, he turned it on in the second half of the season, which absolutely helped. But, you know, I think you have to look at basically, like, none of those teams Washington, Detroit, Pittsburgh, and Philadelphia. They were all there to take the playoff, and nobody wanted the spot. I mean, and the Islanders were included in that, too, until they ultimately figured it out and won third place in the Metro. But, I mean, some of it just has to do – I can't remember how long it's been since a team with a worse goal differential made the playoffs. I think it's been like 30 years or something like that since a team that with a negative goal differential of that significance, minus 37, made the playoffs. But, you know – The Islanders made the playoffs, I think, with the worst penalty kill in the league. So then that rarely happens. So who knows?
Adam Vingan, appreciate you for stopping by, Adam, and looking forward to having you on every single week throughout the playoffs. So we'll catch up with you next week. Maybe the Predators have played a playoff game. Maybe they haven't. Who knows?
Yeah.
We'll get around to it eventually.
We'll
see if Yanni's booked a surprise concert in Vancouver.
Yanni, U2, Pearl Jam. We got several concert characters this upcoming season. But appreciate you, Adam, and always appreciate your insight.
Thanks, guys.
All right, thanks, Adam. Adam Vingan, he is the very best. So normally he will join us Wednesdays at 1 p.m. We'll talk all things Predators and Stanley Cup playoffs. But I do want to react to what we heard from Adam there because, Willie, you brought up something that Barry Trotz said with Jared yesterday, talking about the importance of having playoff experience. And when you look at these two rosters, the Canucks and the Predators, there's an overwhelmingly more playoff experience on the Predator side of things. How valuable is that? And how valuable is that to Barry Trotz? We'll get into that coming up next. We'll get into your thoughts as well. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. Caroline, Willie, D. Mays, we are brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet.
Your team, shockingly, has a lot of playoff experience for a team that we thought was going through a re-something at the beginning of the year. How much do you kind of bank on that playoff experience? How much does that matter to you?
Well, it matters a lot because I think the playoffs is such a different animal. And, you know, each game, there's no momentum that carries from game to game. And I think experienced players recognize that you got to stay in the moment. You have to understand that it's not going to go your way. You can't have the mindset that you're going to grab the puck, go all the way down the ice and score and make something happen every shift. You know, from that standpoint, they have to understand that you have to manage the game correctly. You have to do all those things correctly so that you have great success and stay in the moment. And the team that's most patient, you know, doesn't mismanage the puck, doesn't, you know, take a selfish penalty or a retaliatory penalty, all that matters. And, you know, from that standpoint, I think that's where the experience factor comes in.
That was Predators general manager Barry Trotz on Stillman & Company yesterday. And we just caught up with Adam Vingan. We'll chat with him every Wednesday throughout the Stanley Cup playoffs. But Barry Trotz saying there, look, having playoff experience, in his perspective, it's invaluable. It's something that the Predators have that the Vancouver Canucks, frankly, do not. Now, of course, we know it's not secure, signed, sealed, delivered that that's the playoff opponent, but it's likely going to be the Predators' playoff opponent.
I think tonight is the game to watch because Dallas is hosting the Blues. They just need a point. Even if they lost in overtime, a point would do it. That would make it signed, sealed, delivered. It's crazy things happen. You never know. Like, it's just, we're talking about one game for each team. So a Dallas loss and a Vancouver win, and all of a sudden,
Vancouver plays Thursday.
Vancouver plays Thursday against the Jets, a team that, kind of like the Predators the other night, can't go up or down in the standings. Vancouver now has home ice advantage over the Avalanche, no matter what happens. So they might rest some guys. They might rest more guys than the Predators did. So I think Vancouver's probably going to win that game, I would think, especially if they have to win it, if they know they win and get the one seed. Mm-hmm. So the 90% probably isn't really 90%. I would say it's a little lower than that because crazy things happen.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy things happen. But tonight we'll know more. But looking at the Canucks roster, and this is another thing that Barry Trotz said with Jared that I thought was interesting. He said there's a lot of similarities when you look at the players. Like, expectations weren't real high for either team. Both have coaches that are going to be in the Jack Adams discussion. Probably both on the final ballot. Both have Norris Trophy type of defensemen that should be on the ballot. Quinn Hughes definitely will be. I hope Roman Josi is at least a finalist. Hughes, I think, would win it. You've got though, a lot of players that on the surface, the name doesn't look that scary, but they've had really good seasons. You know, like a Colton Sissons, not a huge household name. It's a good, solid player. Same thing with, you know, some guys on the Canucks who they've got a lot of mileage out of. Like, I don't think the casual fan knows much about Connor Garland, but he's a good player. And he's played really well on this team, for this coach, in this system. So they're more than the sum of their parts. But I think the one advantage that the Predators definitely have is when you look at Ryan McDonagh and Luke Shen and Gus Nyquist and Philip Forsberg and Roman Josi, and that O'Reilly. That group, O'Reilly, they've got a list of guys that have had multiple deep runs on playoff teams. Lots and lots of playoff runs. This Vancouver team lacks that. They don't really have. JT Miller is probably the one guy that you look, and Elias Lindholm, who was traded to Vancouver during the season, has got a fair number of playoff games. But when they list the games, just games played for the two teams, it will be very unbalanced in favor of the Predators.
And it does feel like, at least on paper, that's a difference. And that's, I think, part of the reason why Barry Trotz did bring in these quote-unquote serial winners and Gus Nyquist and Ryan O'Reilly. Obviously, first and foremost, it was creating a culture, but it also comes in handy when you're talking about playoff experience. But D-Maze, you've been there. Mm-hmm. Adam Vingan brought up last segment, maybe it's something that we overstate too much. Maybe it's something that we look into too much. You've been there. You went into the Super Bowl in your rookie season. You went to the playoffs later in your career. How much of a difference is it to have had that playoff experience later in your career versus early in your career rookie season?
I think there's moments where experience, playoff experience, can be valuable. You brought up the 99 season. We didn't have guys with much playoff experience on that team. You know, if you're talking about guys that were drafted in 96, 95, they didn't have any playoff experience. You know, yep. The Oilers weren't going to the playoffs. And then we didn't go to the playoffs the prior two seasons before ultimately moving into what was then Adelphia's Coliseum. We didn't have much playoff experience. But we didn't know what we didn't know. And we just went out there and we played. We knew we were a good team. So experience can help. But then, you know, lack of experience can help because it helped with us. Again, we didn't know what we didn't know, so we went out there and we just played good football, just solid, good football. Hockey, it's different when you have a series. We were playing one-offs. It's easier to accomplish that in one-offs when, because you could just be having a great game and you have a bunch of rookies. You see what Houston was able to do, you know?
Got on a roll in that game against the Browns.
Exactly. So it can happen, but that's with one-offs. When you have series games like the NHL, like the MLB, like the NBA, that's where experience comes in because you're now playing multiple games. You're tired. You're trying to figure out how do we make adjustments and everything else.
If you go down 2-0.
Absolutely. How do we react from that? A young team, they go down 2-0. They may say, you know what? They mentally, they just may throw the towel in.
Panic a little
exactly.
bit.
Exactly. Yeah. Panic. But with a veteran team like the Nashville Predators, you don't want to go down 2-0. But if you do, you know you have the leadership and the experience to know what to do, know how to stick together in situations like that. So the experience when you're playing in a series can be more valuable than when we're playing in a one-off. And the NFL is a one-off. It's valuable, but not as valuable. When you're playing a series, I think that's when it becomes valuable.
I think that's a great point. And Barry Trotz said he kind of slipped that line in there that you hear a lot, and that is there's no such thing as momentum from game to game in a series, and that sounds weird, right?
Because
you're
confidence. Thinking, I would say confidence, not because I think momentum masks itself as confidence. It's confidence, or confidence masks itself as momentum. Mm-hmm. If you have confidence in what you're doing, high confidence, the momentum is going to continue to roll.
Yeah.
So I consider it just confidence in what you're doing.
Yeah.
We're on a roll. It may come off as momentum, but it's really, we believe in what we're doing, and we're going out there, and we're accomplishing it.
And it's at the same time, too, there's that sense by the veteran player who's been through it to know that if you've lost a game, mm-hmm. and you could get whipped in a game, but still to have that even keel to say, okay, that was game two, but game three, we're going to stay confident and we're going to still be able to come back and win. Because other than the Avalanche a couple years ago, you rarely just mow through teams round in, round out. You're going to go through in a playoff run mm-hmm. some rough moments where you look bad. Like the Predators had the Penguins down and out, it looked like, after they tied the series two games apiece, and they're going back to Pittsburgh. You're like, maybe the Penguins are done. They might be worn out. They had the whole run last year. They look weary. Maybe the Predators have them, but they didn't have them, you know, in game five. And then, so every game is its own kind of thing. So I understand the concept of there is no momentum, even though if you have it on your side, you definitely want to say, we have the momentum.
Yeah.
Right? If you have it, you say, you got it. If you're the other team, you're saying, oh, no, there's no such momentum. Mm-hmm. Next game. We got next game. And the veteran team knows how to work that.
And also, you know, you brought up, if you go down, you know, you lose two games in a row. It's also the opposite of if you're up two games, not getting overly confident
yes.
and not thinking, oh,
we got
them
it's
away.
Over.
We yeah. got them, no problem. We took care of them. They looked awful in the first couple of games. They've had injuries, whatever it might be. When you've been there before, when you do have that experience, you know that anything can happen in this league. And you know that it is not over until you have won four games and you are on to the next. So how much of an advantage is it? I don't know. Is it an overwhelming advantage? Probably not. But it's not nothing. And it's what the Predators have. So you're going to take it. And you're going to try to at least use that to your advantage. Another thing that Barry Trotz brought up as an advantage for them, and it's something that Adam kind of alluded to, advantage for the Predators, that is, something that Adam alluded to is the pressure aspect of it. Vancouver plays in a Canadian market that is antsy for just any sort of semblance of success. They've gone through a Stanley Cup drought for so long, and they've been miserable for so long, and they want it so bad. Of course we want a Stanley Cup here, mm-hmm. but this is a Predators team with a first-year head coach and a first-year general manager that's in the midst of a re-something. The pressure differential is a factor here as well, because I think you would both agree there's not nearly as much pressure on this Predators team as there is on the Canucks team. How much of an advantage is that? Is that an advantage? That I don't know, but it's something that's in the Predators' corner.
I think if you have not seen the media crunch that Vancouver has, it's really a thing, I think. And I don't know what to say, the college football aspect. It's not like Kentucky mm-hmm. basketball, because Kentucky basketball has won a lot, or Alabama football. You're under the microscope the same way in Vancouver, but you don't have the credibility of being able to say, well, they have won X amount of championships. That's what Vancouver hasn't had. They got to the Stanley Cup final in Game 7, lost to the Bruins. This was 2011. They beat the Predators in the second round in a really tough series, went all the way to the final and lost, and they had a riot in the city after they lost. It was crazy. And they've gotten known more for that than the fact that they had a great team that almost won the whole thing. So it's really weird, their history. So there's that maybe lack of benefit of the doubt that the media and the fans give them. It's like, oh, they'll blow it. They'll mess it up. You know, there's a lot of that kind of stuff that they have mm-hmm. to fight in that city. And at the same time, they're still under the scrutiny that Alabama football or Kentucky basketball or Tennessee football is under. Mm-hmm. So I do think that adds to some pressure. Now, Rick Tocchet, the coach, is really good at working that. Like, your coach has to know how to work the media in that environment, mm-hmm. and he does a really good job. I think he takes pressure off of his team with that. But I think it'll be there for the playoffs more so than it will be on the Predators, who I think Barry Trotz has done the job from day one just by setting the expectation low. Like, I don't know what we're going to see. We could be sneaky good. Hey, they are sneaky good, but hey, we're in the playoffs. Nobody thought we'd be here. No pressure on us. The pressure's on them.
Barry knows what he's doing mm-hmm. when he said that.
Yes.
I also think he knew what he was doing when he sent a little bit of a message, not to the team, but to the league. And we'll get into that coming up next. And, of course, your thoughts as well. 615-737-1025 is the phone number if you want to get in on the conversation. Caroline Willie D. Mace scored big this spring with Lee Company and the Nashville Predators in the 10K Power Play giveaway. Enter for a chance to win a Kohler home generator or $10,000 toward Lee Company Home Services. That's right, a Kohler home generator or $10,000 toward Lee Company Home Services. So go online to leecompany.com/giveaway to enter. That's leecompany.com/giveaway in the 10K Power Play giveaway. Contest entries are accepted until Saturday, April 20th. Lee Company, all you need.
As a former coach and now a general manager, somebody who's in charge, that by caring about this, you would be allowing other people to care about something that is beyond both their and your control.
Well, I think I would prefer if we started sooner. I just think when you get away from the game, the intensity of the game, all that, for too long, it takes you a while to ramp it up. And in a best-of-seven series, if you can't ramp it up pretty early, you could be packing your bags and going home. So I would prefer a Sunday start if possible, but I'll let the league decide that. That's the number one thing that matters to me. And just once we get the schedule, we'll adapt to it. But I will tell you this, today it is a good day for our group to relax and maybe reflect and maybe even celebrate a little bit today on with our wives and our families. And then tomorrow will be probably a really intense practice, and we'll try to see as soon as we can to when we get our schedule, and we will work from from the back to the front of our schedule in a way that will help us prepare for the playoffs.
That was Barry Trotz on Stillman & Company yesterday. And we always joke, OBB, open book Barry. Like, if he feels a certain way, he's going to let you know. Maybe when it comes to league business, he's not going to be so open, so candid as he is maybe about Predators business. But just listening to Barry, not only in that clip, but in several things that he talked about in terms of playoff scheduling, you could tell that, one, he didn't want to be overly pushy, but two, he wanted his message to be heard. And it sounded like, to me, Barry Trotz was awfully frustrated with the idea of the playoffs not starting until Tuesday and a potential back-to-back from Vancouver to Nashville with, what, that's a five-hour flight and a three-hour time change?
Depending on the wind, it can stretch. If you're going against the wind, it's an extra hour, and it's already probably 4.5 minimum. And I've been on flights where it's taken quite a bit longer than that.
And after you
most
just
of the time going out there,
after you've just played an aggressive hockey game and you're on your way to play another one potentially the very next day, no way.
Yeah, and so I could tell in his voice and listening to the full interview, and Jared asked him about what we've talked about a little bit with the Pearl Jam concert and the JT concert and 21 Savage and all this. He said, yeah, they have some concert dates booked in some tricky dates that are going to make it hard to flow. You know, in the ideal situation, it's you play every other day. That's how a 7-game series should work.
Yeah.
But concerts are booked. In some markets, you have an NBA team in the playoffs along with an NHL team. That complicates things. And sometimes TV wants certain matchups in certain time windows. So that can complicate things. But I do feel like there's probably some lobbying going on, because as we sit here right now, we don't know that the Predators are going to play the Canucks. It's just more than likely. So it could flip, and then this doesn't even come into play. But whoever plays the Canucks is probably eyeing that. The other, LA, Vegas are in that conversation too. They're probably making contingencies. I know that there are traveling people that are coordinator. When would we fly? When would we get there? What hotel would we stay at? That's a very important part of the mix, and you don't want there to be any hiccups. So there's a ton of talking going on behind the scenes. But what he said that really jumped out to me, he said, if you can't ramp up early in a 7-game series, it might be too late. And so if you're rusty in game one, hey, we're rusty in game one, we're fine in game two. That you might be too late. That game could cost you the series.
I mean, you only get maximum 7 cracks at it.
Yeah,
7 if you're lucky. I mean, if you need to take 2 games to get ramped up, then like you said, You're done.
Well, you better take a period. That's all you need.
Yeah.
Get a period to ramp back up. But yeah, the more I think about it, and again, if this was a one-off, then I would be really worried about the long rest, because as we've seen in NFL games where the team that has the most rest, it takes them a while to get going typically, especially if they have one of those matchups in the first round where, you know, either that team, you know, it's a closely contested team based upon personnel, or that team just had your number for the longest. One-offs is typically, it's a little bit different. But when you're playing a series, I think it can be beneficial for you to have that rest. Because a team that's just coming off of playing a game, say a 2 or 3 day rest, they may be rested, but they're really not, because they're still, from a mental standpoint, they're getting in that playoff mode. Whereas the Predators have been rested for 3 or 4 days, and then they can sort of systematically within those days ramp it back up to a point where now we're ready to go. First game, we're not worried about it. Well, the team that didn't have as much rest, sometimes, especially early in the game, you may see the difference in those two teams. One may be faster than the other.
And how much is too much?
Yeah. Yeah,
we've all been on, you know, long vacations before. First day back, not always your sharpest. And I know this is easy for me to say because I have, you know, zero, you know, skins on the wall. It's nothing off my back. But, like, what's stopping Barry Trotz from saying, screw Pearl Jam? Like, screw Justin Timberlake. I'm sorry. Like, I'm not going to let just your scheduling snafus get in the way of me and my team.
Well, that's where the NHL steps in. I mean, Barry's not going to say anything. He's not going to say too much to ruffle any feathers. But you understand.
It's a conversation that has to be had, though.
But you understand that, you know, this isn't advantageous for his team, nor is it advantageous for Vancouver as well. Mm-hmm. And he just would like for it to be more of a even playing ground for both teams in regards to when they start, travel, and all this other stuff. So he's not going to say too much, but I'm sure, just like Nashville, Vancouver is thinking the same thing. Like, seriously? You know, y'all had these games scheduled in here. I mean, these concerts scheduled in here, and y'all knew more than likely, or there was a high chance we would make the playoffs.
Exactly. You didn't think you had a chance to
Absolutely.
Make the playoffs?
What are y'all saying about us? Like, seriously?
Nine games.
Yeah, so I'm sure Vancouver, whoever they, if it turns out they played Nashville, I'm sure they will be just as upset as the Nashville Predators. The only good part about it for them, they're at home, you know.
Max Hurst has been texting. One piece of really good news is Todd Richards, who had a medical procedure, was away for the team the last couple of weeks of the regular season, is back with the team. So great to see Richie. Mm-hmm. Just one of the nicest guys you'll meet. A good, easygoing guy who is easy to talk to off, you know, kind of away from the rink. I think he's been a good influence on the young defenseman. He calls out the defense pairs during the game, so it'll be good to have him back in that role.
Absolutely.
Philip Forsberg didn't practice today, which is nothing new. This is just what they've been doing. But the practice, according to Max, was, as you would expect, pretty up-tempo, rigorous, trying to stay sharp. Barry Trotz went through some good detail, open book Barry, with Jared yesterday about some of the little things that you might see at practice the next couple of days just to try to keep that game edge as best you can in not a game situation.
The other difficult thing is it might be easier for Andrew Brunette to plan out the rigor of the schedule if he knew when they were playing.
I know.
We still don't know when they're playing.
And you're not going to
know until what, Friday?
Well, you could know who you're going to play at the end of tonight.
But you don't know when.
And so behind the scenes, I'm wondering if they'll know after tonight.
Maybe so.
I would hope that you have a pretty good idea, whether it's Sunday or Tuesday, whatever. Because, it's like Barry Trotz said 2 or 3 times in the interview with Jared, when we get our schedule.
Yeah, when we know.
Because
when we know, you will know.
If the Blues win tonight in regulation, then you have to wait and see what happens in the game between the Canucks and the Jets the following night before you could possibly know.
And in the meantime,
that's a whole another night.
Andrew Burnett is thinking, okay, like, this our practice level at this point is going to be, you know, at a 10, and then tomorrow it's going to be a rest day, and then we're back at a 6. I think this would all just be solved if every team ended within 48 hours of one another.
I feel like they used to do that. I used to be more like that. I guess with Seattle in being in the league complicates things, I guess. But that
Seattle.
Is really weird.
Super weird.
Yeah, blame it on Seattle.
Very inconvenient. Mm-hmm. I don't like it when an inconvenience is me. But all right, Jonathan Hutt will join us coming up next. A week from tomorrow, the NFL draft is going down in Detroit. We'll get Hutton's thoughts on what we talked about in Nick Suss's most recent article in the Tennessee. And Nick Suss says, hey, I think the Titans could trade back as far as 13 and still get Joe Alt. We'll get Hutton's reaction to that. And we'll get Hutton's thoughts as we are now just 1 week away from the NFL draft. Caroline Willie D. Mace. Tune in to 94.9 The Fan today as the Nashville Sounds take on the Omaha Storm Chasers at First Horizon Park. Pre-game at 6:20, first pitch at 6:35 p.m., with coverage also available on 94.9 The Fan app and at 94.9thefan.com. Sounds baseball on 94.9 The Fan, presented by Twin Peaks, Family Leisure, and Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning.